That's part of the grand old tradition of folk musicians coming up with forms which kind of imitate somebody else's music, because somebody else's music is always inspiring to new creativity, like the polka and, in klezmer, the bulgar, pseudo Bulgarian music, but it's its own thing.
Hi, you're listening to Conversations with Musicians with Leah Roseman. This episode is a special, short, catch-up episode with the klezmer violinist and composer Alicia Spiegels. I first spoke with her in 2021 in season one of this podcast, and that wide-ranging, in-depth conversation is linked in the show notes. Today, we're focusing on Alicia's new album, Beetle of Fire, with several excerpts from the album with her insights. Please check the show notes for the link to this album and to Alicia's website. I have many episodes featuring klezmer musicians such as Polina Shepherd and Marilyn Lerner, and many artists in the folk and world music scene, so please check out my catalog of episodes. Now to Alicia Spiegels. Hi, Alicia. Thanks so much for joining me here again today.
Thank you for having me.
So we spoke 3 years ago. I think it was the height of the pandemic. And this episode will be directly linked to that one, and people should check it out if they haven't heard it yet, because we got into all kinds of interesting stuff about your history as a klezmer musician and all kinds of different projects. But today we're celebrating your new album, Fiddle of Fire.
I'm holding up the album for the camera. Fiddle of Fire.
So this will be linked for the podcast listeners. The album image will be linked right in the show notes, and you can click right on it to go to Alicia's album. So the violin's kind of in the role of clarinet on the big American big band klezmer sound, right?
That's right.
And I just happened to be looking at this book about Dave Terris that Yale Strom wrote.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you had been playing in this role for many years, but you hadn't made a recording like this yet.
That's right. And I always felt like the klezmer fiddle revival went in the direction of something that I did a lot of on my first album, Fiddle, which actually, I guess, marked the beginning in the way of that revival, which was, a much more string-friendly settings, what has been called sometimes the early music movement of klezmer, which harkens back to a more old world sound, not the American 20th century sound, but the European 19th century sound of the cymbal, which is a hammered dulcimer, and multiple fiddles playing both melody and rhythm and a bowed bass. So that's a beautiful setting and the original natural setting in a way for the fiddle. But when I learned klezmer, I actually studied Brandwein and Terris, the subject of the book you just held up, the two iconic klezmer clarinetists, Jewish-American, immigrant-American, European clarinetists in the early mid-20th century, who inspired the klezmer revival. And they were who I was listening to. I got to hear some of the fiddlers, but there are very few recordings. And there was one who I worked with who was still around, Leon Schwartz, a bit when I was young and he was old. But mostly I listened to those old recordings and I ended up kind of playing like them, sort of an amalgam of them and me. So, and I realized at some point I had never actually recorded that in that kind of a setting, the same setting that we're used to hearing big party bands in. And I felt like people, like a lot of fiddlers, didn't think it was possible. And I wanted to kind of get the word out musically that there's no reason why the fiddle has to play second fiddle to the clarinet when it comes to that, a dance band like that.
Yeah. So I thought it'd be really nice to start with Patch Dance, Slap Dance. It's Alicia's Patch Dance. You wrote this tune?
Yeah, the middle part with the patching or the clapping is one of the traditional patch melodies, but I wrote all the stuff around it.
Okay.
The beginning and the end parts of the three parts.
Yeah.
Or four parts.
As a violinist, I found it very violin friendly. It was kind of fun that way.
Oh, good. Did you try it out under your fingers?
I did not. Maybe I should work on my learning by ear skills.
Oh, I can send you a chart.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah. But it is violin friendly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wrote something that I could play for a change.
My Mama wäre ich, I'm becoming my mother. You're featuring the vocalist Vera Lisinski, and I was really excited to learn about her. Do you want to speak to her singing and her background?
She is a wonderful vocalist. I only learned about her recently from Hengist Netsky, who produced half the album, the Boston band half. The album was recorded with a New York band in New York and a Boston band in Boston. Hengist was actually on both sessions, and he music directed and produced the Boston part. So we started out. I sing that song in concert. And we started that with me singing it in the recording studio. But then we talked about it, and he said, there's this amazing vocalist, Vera Lozinski, who is a native Yiddish speaker and, has a delicious Yiddish accent, which I'll never be able to replicate. There is this idea of post-vernacular Yiddish, which a phrase coined by scholar Jeff Chandler at Rutgers, which is sort of valorizes, instead of us revivalists feeling kind of bad that our Yiddish isn't native and never and you know never will be because it wasn't our first language, the idea that there's this sort of new subcultural language which is post-vernacular Yiddish, and it has its own pleasures, value, and charm and use, and we can embrace it. I could have recorded it with that theory behind it, but when I heard, the recordings of her singing that Hank has played for me, I was like, yeah, let's do this instead. And I was super lucky that she said yes. We did a remote recording with her across the world, and it was just perfect. I mean, the warmth of her voice, and Henkes was right, like her Yiddish, it's the real thing. So, people should definitely Google her and watch YouTube videos. Vira, last name Lozinski.
Yeah, and the topic of that song, I think most women can relate, or and men too, non-binary, everyone can relate to that. I'm becoming my
They have
mother.
to translate it a bit for
Yeah.
their yes, and all those who identify as women and who are getting older
Yeah.
can probably relate. Yeah, when some years ago I did a residency, which I probably talked about in the last podcast, Laba. It's called Laba. And honestly, I never knew what LABA stood for, LABA, but it was a gathering at the 14th Street Y in New York of artists of various disciplines who studied with a novelist named Ruby Namdar. And we examined Hebrew texts, biblical texts, for a year and made art around our sometimes strange, quirky conversations about them. And every year had a theme. And my year's theme was motherhood. So I took all these poems, mostly in Yiddish, wrote music to set them and turn them into songs. And this was the happiest of the poems because these poems about motherhood were not Hallmark cards, let me tell you. This poem is about the poet's mother, not herself as a mother, and how she looks into the mirror and goes, oh my gosh, that's my mother. And I just loved it. So I made a very happy ditty out of it because what are you going to do?
Who's the poet?
Masha Pajukstukker, that's a hyphenated last name, which I find interesting. I never found out why her name was hyphenated. And she wrote a lot of children's poems, apparently. But this one hit the nail on the head. And it has lyrics about, you know, hair turning gray. And if it, for viewers of the video, you could see that you and I are part of that curly gray hair sisterhood.
Yeah.
So it's fun to sing something that's right on point.
Guck ich sich in Spiegel ein, in Spiegel ein. Sag mir, wie viel bin ich alt, bin ich alt. Erstes guckt in immer rein, in immer rein. Vor mein Mama ihr Gestalt, ihr Gestalt. Ronzeln Knätschen mit der Blick. In die Horschein pass mes Gräuen. Wie mit Jorn lang zurück, ois gesehn od sie azoi. Wie mit Jorn lang zurück, ois gesehn od sie azoi. Is es geschehen? Ota zoi sich blutzim gor Efter hob ich sider sehen Ota zint in dimjen gor Nenz is vor, is vor, is vor Zeder mame strich noch strich Auf mein Punem schneid ich Lorch, wer allein mein Mame ich. Auf mein Punem schneid ich Lorch, wer allein mein Mame ich.
I have been studying Yiddish for a few years. It's still not where it's I'd like it to be, but being able to read some Yiddish poetry is such a wonderful thing, to be able to do that, you know, in Yiddish.
Oh, yeah. Especially since when you're learning, they're short. They're shorter than a novel. So you can have the satisfaction of completing, you know, learning a poem. So poetry is a great way to study Yiddish.
And let's talk about Dybbuk Honga. It's a Moldavian dance, right? The Honga?
Yes. You know, honestly, I don't know too much about the ethnomusicology of Honga, but it does evoke Hungary in its, you know, the word. And I imagine that that's part of the grand old tradition of folk musicians coming up with forms which kind of imitate somebody else's music, because somebody else's music is always inspiring to new creativity, you know, like the polka and, you know, in klezmer, the bulgar, you know, pseudo-Bulgarian music, but it's its own thing. So the onga, I think, somehow has got that in there somewhere. But I know the onga from, you know, the tunes with that title that I've learned, and they're always very fast and have certain sorts of phrases which I incorporated in this. This one also has some 5/4 bars, which are never, as far as I know, in traditional ongas.
Okay.
But it just, the melody cried out for an extra beat in some of those bars, and I couldn't deny it. So,
do you want to explain to people what a dybbuk is who don't know?
Yes. So a dybbuk is the disembodied spirit of a deceased person who had unresolved business in life and is doomed to wander the world trying to sort that out. And in the 1920s, a century ago, an ethnographer, a Jewish ethnographer, an ethnographer from the Soviet Union, named Anski, went around collecting folklore, also klezmer music. That's a whole other story. And there, in particular, folklore about Dybbuks, and turned it into a famous play, kind of what they called a folk play, called The Dybbuk, about a yeshiva boy who falls in love with a girl, and they can't marry, and he dies, and his Dybbuk then possesses her. And it's an a Jewish exorcism tale. And in the 1990s, playwright Tony Kushner adapted it into his own play called The Dybbuk. My band at the time, The Klezmatics, did the music for it. We were also on stage. And I wrote a bunch of music for it, some of which was used and some of which stayed in the files. But I always wanted to record. And this is one of them, The Dybbuk Honga.
Wonderful. Right before we started recording today, I told you I was in the midst of Googling if South Fallsburg was in the Catskills, because I was looking at my notes, because you have the South Fallsburg Bulgar, which I don't know if you wrote it or it's from that tradition.
Ah, the South Fallsburg Bulgar is exactly what we were talking about at the beginning. It's a composition of clarinetist Dave Tarras. Okay. And those guys, you know, played at the Catskill Resorts, for those who don't know what that is, and why should anybody but the people who lived it know. That's where immigrant Jews, New Yorkers, in mid-century would go in the summer for vacation. And it was a big party. These giant institutions with big dining halls, and everybody would eat together, and there would be entertainment and, you know, rustic cabins. It was like not fancy. It was very community oriented. And so he named it after one of those towns in Sullivan County, New York, and it is classic Dave Tarras. I would love for people who like the tune on my album to just go to YouTube and listen to Dave do it. But I feel like I kind of sound like that kind of clarinetist, I thought, well, I should actually record a couple of these things and do it for posterity. So it's on the album, that tune and Fetter Max's Bulgar are the two examples of that. These sort of mid-century American Jewish compositions with, you could hear the American music influence there in the band arrangement, particularly in Fetter Max, the kind of, the sort of jazzy, popish chords and stuff. I just love those tunes, and that's why they're there.
You mentioned Hank Osnetsky, who's also a musicologist and author as well as pianist. Did he?
Yes.
Did he do some of these arrangements, or did you work together on them?
For Fedor Maxis Bulgar, I copied the original, you know, the original arrangement for the original recording. No, the arranging, you know, such as it is, I did, and you know, we worked some stuff out in the studio. It's pretty straight ahead, but it was part, you know, that like the stops in the Dipikonga and McDowell Frerichs, those are all part of the original composition.
Okay. Was there anything we didn't talk about that you want to highlight?
I could talk about all these tracks briefly if you want to hear, and then you can just decide.
Sure.
Fiddle of Fire Fantasy is in the tradition of what we call the Kala Bezetzen or Kala Bevenen, which means making the bride cry, yeah, in the first case. In the second, it means seating the bride. What Kala Bezetzen means seating the bride, and Kala Bevenen means making the bride cry. These are wedding ritual forms, and I take the vibe of those and I do something which is kind of part that, part cantorial style, because I also like playing cantorial style, like Golden Age cantorial style music on the violin. And it's just, it's a pure improvisation. It's not composed. I did that in the moment in the studio. Levit Bulgar is something that no one knows who wrote it, but it was a favorite of another mid-century clarinetist named Marty Levit, who made an album called King of the Klezmers with a cover art with a crown. And people probably don't all realize who know that album that it was sort of tongue-in-cheek, you know, like King of the Jews. This is Jewish humor, so which makes him like the Jesus of Klezmer or something. But also his friends apparently would joke, oh, you're the king of the Klezmers, which is a joke because it's like that and a buckle get you a cup of coffee, you know, enjoy your royalty. So, but it's a beautiful album, and it's the only time that tune was ever recorded was on that album. So this is its reintroduction into the recorded canon, and it's a virtuoso piece, both for the clarinet and for the violin. I mean, it's not Paganini, but for us klezmers, it's a virtuoso piece. And it's so much fun. And according to his son, Dave, who's a klezmer trombonist in New York, he had it on his stand until the day he passed away. It was the last thing on his music stand. So that's the Levit Bulgar. And well, what else has got a backstory? That's it. The rest is just music.
Well, this was just great, so thanks so much.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please share this with your friends and check out episodes you may have missed at leahroseman.com. If you could buy me a coffee to support this series, that would be wonderful. Or you can browse the collection of merch with a very cool, unique, and expressive design from artist Steffi Kelly, with notebooks, mugs, shirts, phone cases, and more. I'm an independent podcaster, and I really do need the help of my listeners. All the links are in the show notes. Have a wonderful week.